He's deceived everyone in his life with ease. And he's betrayed all of us with his actions. Before parole board in 25 years from now, he may seem remorseful. He may beg and plead to be released. He may claim to be changed. Please don't be fooled. He's a monster. And I truly do believe he'll kill again if given the chance.
Welcome back. I'm Cassie, and this is A Wicked World. I quickly just wanted to say thank you so much for 40,000 subscribers. That is amazing. And it's thanks to each and every one of you for watching and supporting the channel and helping get these children's stories out there. The story I have for you today is one that's made even sadder due to the fact that prior to this little girl's murder, she was already fighting for her life. And that life that she was fighting so hard for was taken from her by somebody she loved and trusted. This is the story of Maddox Lawrence. Maddox Mary Lawrence was born on April 24th, 2014 in Syracuse, New York, to her mother Morgan Lawrence and her father Ryan Lawrence. Maddox was an only child who was happy and full of energy. She was also said to have the best laugh, and she was constantly just full of giggles. Maddox's parents, Ryan and Morgan, had met while they had been working for a tea store located inside the Destiny Mall in Syracuse. And at that same time, Morgan was also holding down jobs at two clothing stores, one of them being Francesca's. The couple was inseparable, and they fell in love quickly. And not long into them dating, Morgan became pregnant with Maddox. And soon after, Ryan and Morgan got married. The family lived in a rented home on the 1,000th block of Valley Drive in Syracuse. And due to tight finances, they only had one car to share between the two of them. When Maddox was born in 2014, the couple was over the moon. They were thrilled to be new parents, and Maddox was happy and healthy. But then, shortly before Maddox's first birthday, her parents noticed that her dark brown eyes were getting even darker. Worried and thinking this was rather unusual, they brought her into the doctors. There, unfortunately, Maddox would be diagnosed with retina cancer. It's actually a rare form of eye cancer called retinoblastoma. After getting the diagnosis, for months, both Ryan and Morgan drove their daughter to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City, where she underwent hours-long chemotherapy treatments targeted directly at the tumor. These treatments could last as long as 6 hours each time. Now, in addition to the couple not bringing in a lot of money, they were also taking time off of work and paying for Maddox's expensive cancer treatments. So along with the stress of their little girl having cancer, their financial problems added even more stress onto both of their shoulders. In order to help ease the situation, Maddox's parents would end up opening a GoFundMe to help pay for her medical bills, and they would raise over $9,000. On February 20th, 2016, Morgan was scheduled to work at her job at Francesca's at the mall. Since they only had one car, Ryan and Maddox dropped Morgan off for her shift around 4 p.m. They were supposed to come back later around 10 p.m. to pick her up once her shift was over. However, that never happened. Instead, right before her shift ended, Morgan received a text message from Ryan saying that he had left the car in the parking lot with the keys in it and she could drive herself home. Confused, Morgan walked out to her car, and there she noticed that her husband, Ryan, also left her a video message, and in it, he indicated he might hurt himself and their baby girl. Morgan freaked out and called 911. She told them the situation, and a missing persons alert as well as an Amber Alert was issued the very next morning on February 21st. The Amber Alert also described Ryan as being emotionally unstable and said that he had a history of mental illness. Syracuse police had actually been called to deal with Ryan multiple times in the year leading up to Maddox's murder. And details of these encounters is what had alerted state police to his possible mental illness. Ryan was actually diagnosed with bipolar and antisocial personality disorder. Police began searching the inner harbor of Syracuse, as well as Baldwinville, which is where Ryan had grown up. Little was known about where Ryan and Maddox may have been, or their mode of transportation. So for the next couple of days, highway signs and televisions flashed the Amber Alert, looking for Maddox. Police were out searching high and low for the father and daughter, leaving no stone unturned. Helicopters were searching along the Seneca River and Highway 690. While other officers searched Whiskey Hollow Road, which is a seasonal road in the town of Memphis, and also near the Tri-County Mall. During all of this, the toddler's mother, Morgan, would make a publicly broadcasted plea to her husband, Ryan, saying,
"If you're listening, please just bring Maddox home. Maddox, I love you, honey. Ryan, please call. We just want to know that the both of you are safe. The whole family loves you. The whole family wants you both home. And we just want to know that you guys are in a good place. And we'd love to see you both as soon as possible."
Thank you, ma'am. Give me 1 second. I'll take some questions if you have them.
Then, 2 days after they had originally gone missing, on February 22nd, authorities received a phone call saying that Ryan had been spotted at a store called Thrifty Shopper on Downer Street in Baldwinsville, New York. A former employee who had happened to be in the store at the time had spotted Ryan and at first thought he was just some homeless man. He smelled strongly of firewood and seemed to be in a hurry, which had drawn her attention to him. But when the ex-employee looked a little bit closer, she realized that she recognized this man. That was regardless of the long black wig he was wearing, as well as the knit cap, sunglasses, and bandana. The ex-employee had recognized Ryan as being the person from the missing persons alert that police had issued, so she contacted authorities. Immediately after they received this tip, police rushed down to where Ryan had been spotted, and they found him walking on a nearby street. As they tried to stop Ryan to speak with him, he told them that he was just headed to a nearby soup kitchen. He was, however, apprehended at that time and brought in. And unbeknownst to police, Maddox had already been dead for about 2 days at this point. Now, when authorities had picked up Ryan, upon asking him what his name was, he had given them the fake name of Roll Rivers. He also gave them a fake birthday. Police called Ryan out on the fact that his name and birthday didn't match, and then one of the officers reached over and pulled the wig off of Ryan's head. At that point, Ryan just said, "You got me." But when the police officer asked Ryan where his daughter Maddox could be found, he gave a very unsettling answer and said, "She's in a better place." And that was it. At the time of his arrest, Ryan had on him a backpack which contained a book called 100 Deadly Skills, which is described in a book review as a hands-on practical survival guide from a retired Navy SEAL, adapted for civilians from actual special forces operations to elude pursuers, evade capture, and survive any dangerous situation. Ryan also had a handcuff key and a camping stove on him. And in addition to lying about his name, Ryan had also lied to police and told them that he had given his daughter Maddox to a couple named Chris and Tyler. He claimed he had met this couple at the Syracuse Real Food Co-op. And he would stick to the story for hours, though the details did begin to change. Tyler soon became Taylor, and Ryan also told police that they had taken his daughter to Bolivia or Mexico or some other place. He couldn't quite get that straight. Syracuse police detectives questioned Ryan all night, and it wasn't until early the next morning that Ryan finally agreed to take them to the places he had gone on the day Maddox went missing. And later that morning, while he was showing an officer the places that he had traveled to, Ryan also made a confession while in the back of the police cruiser. He said to the officer, "You won't look at me the same way once I tell you what I did to her body." And upon Ryan's return back to the police station, he gave a 40-minute confession and then signed a police statement of his confession. Now that Ryan had told police officers where they could find Maddox's body, they began searching Syracuse's Inner Harbor, which is an inlet off the end of Onondaga Lake. And only a couple hours later, state police divers found a body underwater along the creek walk, a biking and hiking path. It was the body of 22-month-old Maddox Lawrence, which had been pulled from the water around noon on February 23rd. Ryan was charged with second-degree murder the same afternoon. However, the charges would be enhanced to first-degree murder and kidnapping a month later on March 23rd. He pled not guilty and was held without bail. Come to find out, Maddox had been killed not very long after she and her father had dropped Morgan off for work that day. After they had dropped her off, Ryan then drove with Maddox down Interstate 81 towards Tinker Falls. It's a secluded waterfall that's popular in the warmer months. There's also a park surrounding it, where Ryan would bring Maddox. Once they were in the park, Ryan took a wooden baseball bat and beat Maddox in the head until she died. He also told detectives that prior to killing his daughter, he had prayed and said, "God, if I'm not meant to kill her, make her stumble." After he had killed her, Ryan then burned Maddox's body in a fire pit for 3 hours and then took her body back out and placed it into his car. He had then driven to the creek where she would eventually be found. There, he tied her body to a cinder block and dropped her into the water. Ryan's plan was to make everyone think that Maddox had simply run away. He killed his daughter and then was going to run far off so he could kill himself, he said. And the reason he had all the survival gear on him when police found him was because he said he needed to make it to the Ohio River prior to killing himself. He hoped that if he made it there, his body could wash all the way down to the Caribbean. That's where his mother's ashes had been disposed of in 2008. Yet chances are a body, an entire adult body, is not going to get all the way down the Ohio River into the Caribbean without a single person seeing it. So, either a lie or a terrible plan. Ryan's mother, Mary Lawrence, had died of kidney cancer in 2008. And ironically, Mary had been the director of the Victims Advocate Program at the Onondaga County District Attorney's Office. And she had held this position for 10 years after her brother had been murdered in 1990. So Ryan's explanation for killing Maddox varied, but one of the explanations that he gave was that he didn't want her to grow up without a father, and at that point, he had already determined that he was going to kill himself. He said at first he had thought about just running away with her and letting her live, but then he said he realized he didn't want his daughter to grow up without a mother, so that's when he decided to kill her. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Before killing his daughter, Ryan had even tried to build his own kayak out of cardboard and plastic wrap. This, however, he had deemed to be not seaworthy for some reason, so that plan had been abandoned. Ryan would also later tell a psychiatrist that the reason he had burned his daughter's body was because he thought it increased his chances of not getting caught. And if he went to prison, he knew that he wouldn't be able to kill himself in the way he wanted. After the murder, Ryan dropped off the family car at the Destiny USA Mall for Morgan to drive herself home. He also left the video message at this time, and in it he said, "Morgan, I love you, but I can't do this anymore. I want you to have the life you deserve." He then told her that he had taken Maddox with him, but he said nothing about the fact that he had already killed his daughter at that point. And after leaving the car in the parking lot, Ryan had then walked to Baldwinsville, where he had hoped to find a boat. Ryan claimed he eventually planned on committing suicide or just dying due to starvation or infection. But I seriously doubt it. It sounds like he just wanted to take off in a boat and get away with the murder. The odd thing was that Ryan had always seemed like a loving father. When he did morning pastry deliveries for the cafe that him and Morgan both worked for, he would never leave Maddox in the car. Even if it was just for a quick delivery, he would always take her out and bring her in with him. The father had actually done everything he could to make sure his daughter was happy and safe. That is, up until February 20th. A little while after Ryan had been arrested, his defense team made the claim that the confession their client had given to authorities after his arrest had not been legally obtained. And at a hearing that was held to determine if Ryan's confession could be used as evidence, Ryan testified that he had wanted to stop talking to police hours into his interrogation, but they had just kept pushing him. The detective who had questioned Ryan said otherwise, however. He said that Ryan had been actively engaged in the conversation the entire time, and he had been the one that was willing to take them to where Maddox's body was. It wouldn't matter in the end, though, because Ryan would take a plea deal that Maddox's family had agreed to, and on September 15th, 2016, Ryan pled guilty to first-degree murder. He was then sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. During Ryan's sentencing hearing, he admitted to beating his one-year-old daughter to death as tears streamed down his face. Ryan's lawyer said that his client was just devastated for what he had done, and at this point, he would do anything to take it back. It was theorized that Ryan had actually been jealous due to all the attention that Maddox was getting because of her cancer diagnosis, compared to the attention that he was not getting, though this theory was never confirmed by Ryan or his defense team. Ryan would also later say that at the time of his daughter's murder, he had been suffering from a psychotic disorder which had been brought on by a number of problems that he did not think he could solve. He was working at a dead-end job as a gas station attendant. He had a suspended driver's license and a $1,000 fine that he didn't have the money to pay. His car was also uninspected, his marriage was falling apart, and 8 years later, he was still very much grieving his mother's death. The day before Ryan murdered Maddox, he had actually brought her to the same exact spot with intentions of killing her then. However, he decided he couldn't go through with it. But he had then gone back the next day, so he had a lot of time to think it through and decide, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this. But he did it anyways. So there was serious premeditation. A psychiatrist that had been hired by the defense found that Ryan was suffering from an extreme emotional disturbance at the time of the murder. He had symptoms of non-psychotic mental illness. The psychiatrist also said that Ryan had told him that his dead mother had been the one that spoke to him and told him to let her take care of Maddox, and that was why he killed her. But Ryan's family doesn't believe for a second that he ever heard voices. In addition, Ryan also told this psychiatrist that he had been a heavy drug user from the age of 16 to 20. He had used LSD, cocaine, mushrooms, marijuana, ketamine, and ecstasy. However, he said he hadn't used any drugs in the week prior to his daughter's murder. On top of all of this, Ryan also told the psychiatrist that he had stolen from every single job that he ever had, and he had been caught by at least one of the employers and fired. The families of both Ryan Lawrence and Morgan Lawrence would give statements in court explaining how hurt they were and still are because of Ryan's actions. The first to speak was Maddox's aunt and then uncle. Her uncle, Richard Lawrence, Ryan's brother, said that the brother he once knew is now dead. He then said, "Maddox is the victim and you, my brother, are to blame. You are a stranger and also a murderer." And rather than being there for a murderer, like I've seen so many family members do when telling these stories, instead, Rich supported Morgan every step of the way while they got justice for Maddox. Rich Lawrence would also say that his brother Ryan lacked direction, was selfish, was a slacker, never took responsibility well, and never took authority well either. But he was generally good-hearted, he said. That's probably the only good thing you could say about him from the sounds of it. And later on in Ryan's sentencing, Morgan Lawrence's parents, Maddox's grandparents, went to the stand to speak about how much losing their granddaughter had affected them. The heartbroken grandfather spoke about all the milestones that he will now miss in his granddaughter Maddox's life. He said, "I will miss out on her attending preschool. I won't be able to take a picture of her on the steps of the school bus for her first day of kindergarten. I won't hear her recite the alphabet or count to 100. Then Morgan, Maddox's mother, went on to speak directly to her ex-husband Ryan.
Okay. His completely irrational actions have left me with no answers or closure. Ryan has not only taken my daughter away, but also abandoned me as well. leaving me with feelings of extreme loneliness and sadness. This situation also leaves me questioning my own judgment of others' intentions and their character. Burying my daughter alone was the single most hollowing experience I've ever endured. Knowing that her death was at the hands of the man that I once loved and trusted with our lives shakes me to the core. Because of what Ryan has done, I can never again be sure that I know someone for who they truly are. Ryan Lawrence's actions have affected the lives of others as well. Maddox was loved by everyone she met. She was strong and inspiring. She's missed greatly by everyone who knew her. And those who are very close to her, such as our family and her heartbroken and outraged. I want her to be known for who she was, and I want to be known for the loving mom and wife that I truly was. As a result of Ryan's actions, I need for him to spend the rest of his lifetime in prison. I fear for my safety, and I fear for the safety of others who are released back into the community. He's deceived everyone in his life with ease. And he's betrayed all of us with his actions. He's charismatic and believable when he wants to manipulate the situation in his favor. Before parole board in 25 years from now, he may seem remorseful. He may beg and plead to be released. He may claim to be changed. Please don't be fooled. He's a monster. And I truly do believe he'll kill again if given the chance. Don't give him that chance. This is the most horrible thing I've ever endured in my life. But I want you to know, you will not drag me down. I will rise above this and honor my daughter in my own life. You took Maddox's only chance at life, Ryan. Therefore, you don't deserve another chance at your own.
We'll be right back.
Bloody FM presents Hometown Ghost Stories, a paranormal podcast that investigates a new town every week, bringing you all the hauntings, from haunted houses to castles, bridges to asylums, wandering spirits to demons. Over 100 episodes covering different towns all over the world. Tune in to Hometown Ghost Stories live on YouTube every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern or on any podcast platform and find out if your hometown is haunted.
Ryan was also given the chance to speak before his sentence was handed down. He accepted blame for his actions and told the courtroom how he loved his daughter.
It's incredibly hard to talk about this for many reasons, and even harder to find the words to explain such a horrible crime. It's with all of my heart that I convey my sincerest apology to everyone for taking Maddox from her family and everyone who loved her. I'm also utterly sorry for denying Maddox her chance at life. I can't expect your forgiveness, but I tell you now that the sorrow I feel for what I've done is complete and comes from the deepest depths of my being. This sorrow I feel has nothing to do with being in jail, but for the pain, for the loss of Maddox. I miss her so bad. Max is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, and the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'd say that to her all the time, and to anyone else who'd listen. It was amazing to have her everywhere I went, including all the times I brought her to work with me. When our baby was diagnosed with cancer, we were in shock, but hopeful that the doctors in New York City would cure her, as indeed they did. Even after enduring countless overnight trips to the hospital and fruitless attempts at soothing a baby who couldn't possibly understand why she couldn't eat for hours before invasive treatment procedures, the threat of her cancer returning was very real. Our work schedules were arranged so that one of us was always with the baby, but there was very little time for the three of us together, nor enough money for a sitter or much of anything else. Still, we treated her and fed her better than we did ourselves, and loved her far more than anything else we've ever known. In no way can I justify my actions, and there is no one to blame but myself. There is no good explanation for such a horrendous crime, and regret is too simple a term to describe what I feel. What I can say is I've never felt such strong emotions towards anything in my life than my ever-growing and unconditional love for Maddox, and now I'm completely distraught by overwhelming grief and anguish for what I've done. I was never jealous of my daughter. Both our families know I love Maddox. If anything, I only wanted more for her. Maddox was always at the top of my list, and is constantly, to this day, the focal point of my thoughts and actions since she first came into my life. I'll never overcome this feeling of loss, but I will spend the rest of my life trying to figure out how I got to such a dark, irrational state. She was my life's purpose, and making her happy was my job. Such strong feelings of love, however, brought equally strong feelings of fear and uncertainty when it came to my responsibility for her happiness. Although I blame no one else for my acts, as the pressures to give her the perfect life built up, I also struggled against relentless waves of negative emotions every day, bearing witness to the pain and sadness in any of my wife and daughter's interactions. Yet no reason and no psychological diagnosis seemed plausible to me to have made me commit this act against my very nature, taking the one thing I love most. This Easter, my father, weeping, asked me what I was thinking. In despair, I gave him the only answer I could. I don't know. Although these pressures led me to this unthinkable act, I cannot now make sense of what I did. There's no valid reason for why our daughter Maddox had to die. Not a second goes by when I don't wish I could take back what I did, and that Maddox would still be alive. I pray all the time that she's in a better place and that God and my mother are watching over her. To Morgan and all of those who loved her, I hope that from my plea and acceptance of responsibility, you can find at least some measure of closure from the pain I inflicted. This was, and is, without question, the worst act I will ever commit. I recognize that no one but myself can be blamed for this atrocity, and I will always be traumatized knowing I'm responsible for such incomprehensible actions. Although I accept this punishment, nothing can be worse. Nothing can be worse than my own despair at the loss of Maddox, and I regret that I'm not alone in that feeling. I love my daughter with all my heart. The only thing that can match my love and loss of her now is the dreadful pain and remorse I feel for committing such a terribly, terrible crime. I'm sorry. I know I can never be sorry enough.
And the judge would say to Ryan,
there is no term for a parent who loses a child. That's how awful it is. I say this to you in order to describe to everyone, in some small way, the scope and breadth and devastating result of your callous and selfish and horrific acts in taking Maddox's life. You had no right. You had no right to decide when she should die. And what you did not kill was the love in the hearts of so many relatives and friends. That love in their hearts will live forever.
Ryan Lawrence is currently being held in the Sing Song Correctional Facility, which is a maximum security prison about 30 miles north of New York City. Beginning the same day that Maddox's body had been found, people began placing vibrant flowers, stuffed animals, and candles along the creek walk as a memorial to the toddler. The mementos were placed right below the crime scene tape, separating the walkway from the devastating scene where the baby girl's body had been pulled from the water. And a memorial also popped up in front of Maddox's home on the 1000th block of Valley Drive in Syracuse. A sense of deep sadness had taken over the neighborhood. Those who had heard the heartbreaking news had started to leave balloons and candles. And a drawing left at the home said on it, "Rest peacefully, baby Maddox." A private funeral was later held for Maddox Lawrence. Well, thank you for listening to all of Maddox's story today. This just doesn't make sense to me. Ryan was fighting to keep his daughter alive for months on end, and then one day he just decided to kill her? I don't understand why, and none of his excuses seem to be making any sense. Though, is there really ever a reason for killing an innocent child that would make sense? So, if you do like true crime and you want to hear it from me, then don't forget to hit that subscribe button below and turn on those notifications too so you'll know when I upload a new video, which is 2 to 3 times every week. Thanks for watching A Wicked World today. Until next time, take care, guys. Bye. Thank you to all the patrons of A Wicked World. Now, there's even more of A Wicked World on Patreon. So check it out at patreon.com/awickedworld or use the Patreon app. You'll have access to exclusive videos each month and more. Any support truly helps to make sure the victims never get forgotten and to highlight the shortcomings of society associated with each case. Do you have a suggestion for a case you'd like to see me cover? If so, send me an email at awickedworldtruecrime@gmail.com.